this week, of course, we're going to be looking at the 11 or 12 or 14 resurrection appearances, as it is quite difficult, you'll find, to figure out exactly how many times Jesus appeared to various individuals or groups of people in that 40 days after he rose from the dead. Before we start to look, though, at these individual occurrences themselves, I thought it might be, you know, just kind of fun and informative if you would just follow with me, starting on page 253, as I went through and just picked out the emotional state of the various people who are mentioned as the tomb has been discovered to be empty. And so I'm hoping that it'll just help us then to appreciate the wide range of emotions that are confronting a people who are looking at this unheard of thing, this impossible thing. There have been resurrections from the dead in the Old Testament. There have certainly been resurrections at the hands of Jesus and the apostles, but they were there, you know. And now this individual, 3 days buried, is raised from the dead himself. And so if you're on page 253 of the Harmony, and you look down at the very bottom there in Matthew's column at verse 8, they departed quickly from the tomb with two emotional states, fear and great joy. And so that's you know, two kind of conflicting emotions going on there, but simultaneously, this is a joyous thing, but it also scares you to death. What in the world, you know, does this mean? You know, if that rich uncle that I never heard about finally passes away and bequeaths to me those several billions of dollars that are surely lying out there waiting for me, I've always wondered, how was I going to respond to that? As a matter of fact, that verse reflects exactly how I think I would feel if I suddenly had large amounts of money dumped on me. Half my brain would say all my problems are solved, I'm as happy as I've ever been or will be, and I'm going to, in fact, I'll quit preaching and move to Israel. How's that sound? Okay. The other one is my, oh my, Jesus said, you're about to be tested beyond anything that you can imagine. Can you survive this and be scared to death? The stories that I've heard, for instance, of people who do win large sums of money, and how they have to change their phone numbers and sell their houses and change their names because suddenly they're besieged by total strangers, you know, begging for money, the destruction of the family, you know, just endless problems that arise. Well, look, you're looking at an empty tomb. What does that mean? I'm glad for the news. These two say that he's alive. But what does it mean? And then in the column that's for Mark right there, it says in verse 8, they fled from the tomb. So the fear is kind of controlling the feet, it looks like. Trembling and astonished. And the last word in verse 8 is afraid. So if we put Mark and Matthew together, it would seem that their overriding condition is fear, astonishment. So there's some joy there, you know, but it's being overwhelmed, at least in numbers, with fear, trembling, astonishment, and afraid. And to this we add, fled. If you turn the page on 254 in the left-hand column at verse 11, these words appear to them as nonsense, and they would not believe. And then in the next to the last line of that next verse, in verse 12, we have Peter marveling at that which had happened. But if you look at the verse 9 in John's column on the right-hand side of that page, they did not yet understand the scripture that he must rise again from the dead. And that brings us then to this first resurrection appearance at the bottom of the page, where we are told that Mary is standing outside the tomb and she is weeping. But then, over and after this first resurrection appearance, on page 255 in the left-hand column at verse 11, she tries to tell people, and when they heard that he was alive and had been seen by her, how do her listeners respond? This is stronger. It's not that they can't believe it. They what? They refused to believe it. Here's evidence being presented. And after 3.5 years of Jesus, you know, breaking all the records, and then in the last months, very pointedly telling them he's going to raise from the dead, they will not. They refuse. Now, page 256, in the middle there, in the left-hand column, it's Mark 16:13. They went away and reported it to others, and they did not believe them either. So still they're persisting. As you go down to that lower block of text there, it's Mark 16 and verse 17. The last word there is sad. Starting at verse 22, in the bottom of that page, also some women among us amazed us when they were at the tomb early in the morning. Turning the page over to page 258. In 258, in the left-hand column now, this is the sixth appearance of Jesus. But in verse 14 now, down in the middle there of Mark's column, he reproached them for their unbelief and hardness of heart. There's a whole lot of unbelieving going on, and they refuse to believe. And Jesus now is rebuking them for that unbelief. This is not tolerable by this point. You ought to get this, and you need to be rebuked for it. And it says also, hardness of heart. But Luke tells us in verse 37 there that they were startled and frightened and thought they saw a spirit. In 38, Jesus recognized the problem. He asks, why are you troubled? Why do doubts arise in your mind? They're troubled, they're doubtful, they're unbelieving, they're frightened, they're joyful, they're amazed, they're marveling. You know, look at this welter of emotional states. Well, in John 20, verse 20 is split there, so after the blank space, the disciples therefore rejoiced when they saw the Lord. So now things are really starting to pick up, though still when you get to page 261, and you're in Matthew chapter 28, when they saw him, they worshipped, but some were doubtful. And then when you turn another page to 263, very bottom of Luke's column there, they returned to Jerusalem with great joy. And you turn the page, and what do you see? They don't get there until the last couple of sentences of all four Gospels. And so, brethren, we are about to be looking over this week and next week at least 11, possibly as many as 14 times that Jesus is recorded to have appeared to people. Likely in 40 days, he could have appeared in different occurrences to twice that number, three times that number. Could you meet three different groups of people in a day, 40 days in a row? Easily. Most of us do that in the course of a day. There's likely hundreds and hundreds of appearances. So we're going to see 11 to 14.
I missed the verse on page 261.
On 261, I highlighted Matthew 28:17 in the left-hand column. It's the last word of verse 17, doubtful.
Okay.
There you go. So if everybody now will come back, yeah, we'll start looking at these appearances at the bottom of page 254. We have that first one in John chapter 20. And we'll just bear in mind as we go through, it's going to take us 2 weeks to do it, you're going to be witnessing a great transformation in these disciples. They will go from first an overwhelmingly polarized condition of confusion, unbelief, sadness, and fear. And then, bit by bit, throughout that first day and the days after that, they will begin to pull their act together. More and more of them will be able to believe. The balance will shift in favor of joy. And finally, we're going to find them at the end, you know, fully convinced, understanding. This is why the book of Acts will tell us it's 40 days that Jesus is there. He didn't just rise from the dead, pass on by, you know, wave at everybody on his way to the Mount of Olives for the ascension, and then head on up back to the throne. I'm understanding this to be 40 days worth of really having to work in some cases to convince people that Jesus is back from the dead. What does that tell you then about the certainty of his having been raised from the dead? The most dubious hearts you can imagine invest the most critical examination that they know how to muster. But in the end, what does everybody know? Jesus is alive. So we come to John chapter 20 on verse 254 at the very bottom. Mary was standing outside the tomb weeping. And so as she wept, she stooped and looked into the tomb. She beheld two angels in white sitting, one at the head and one at the feet, where the body of Jesus had been lying. And they said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping?" Now, by the way, brethren, where are we? What usually happens in tombs? It's kind of ironic in a way. What else would you expect? "Woman, why are you weeping?" She said to them, "Because they have taken away my Lord, and I do not know where they've laid him." When she said this, she turned around and beheld Jesus standing there and did not know that it was Jesus. And Jesus said to her, "Woman, whom are you seeking?" Supposing him to be the gardener, she said to him, "Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you've laid him, and I will take him away." And Jesus said to her, "Mary." She turned and said to him in Hebrew, "Rabboni," which means teacher. And Jesus said to her, "Stop clinging to me, for I have not yet ascended to the Father, but go to my brethren and say to them, I ascend to my Father, to your Father, to my God, and your God." Mary Magdalene came, announcing to the disciples, "I have seen the Lord," and that he had said these things to her. But if you look over in verse 10 of that column, and I see I'll have to go home and highlight two more that I missed. Verse 10, she went and reported to those who had been with him while they were mourning and weeping. When they heard that he was alive and had been seen by her, they refused to believe it. So they're just, at this point, brethren, it just, you know, is more than they can handle. So, no, you're not enough. Your testimony is not enough. We refuse to believe it. But at this moment, as you all know so well, it is Mary Magdalene, Mary the sinner, Mary from whom seven demons were cast out, Mary, you know, who has this terrible reputation that's been hanging over her for who knows how many years, who is blessed with this first of the resurrection appearances. Now, this woman, whatever her age might be, is fit in God's eyes to be the first. She will meet, therefore, the first resistance, refusing to believe, which will continue for 2,000 years, and which you and I face so very regularly as well. People refusing to believe the simple evidence. But when you know it's true, does it matter if you're the only one on the planet who knows the truth? You know that it's true. So Mary is given this great honor and blessing. Yes?
I don't understand the phrase, "I have not ascended to the Father yet, and why are you clinging?"
Right.
How does that fit?
That's a great question. There's been some translation difficulty, you know, in the past, and the King James says, "Don't touch me," and that misses the point entirely. I think what's happening right there is only, and we have to read between the lines, but I'm sure that we all would want to do exactly the same thing. I'll reveal a little bit about myself in confession, maybe. You know, I am not a hugger, or at least I didn't used to be. And then years were going by and I was preaching, and I had some older women take me aside and tell me, "You better figure that out and become one." Okay. So I had to work at it. And now I'm a hugger. Okay. And I like it. I really do. But it is, you know, I never had trouble hugging my wife, never had trouble hugging my children. You know, I hug for the same reason everybody does, with those that you really love. You don't have to get over it there, do you? No. And so this is a woman who has invested in Jesus. She's one of those that has been supporting him and following after him. She is one who owes to him, her forgiveness and has shown it in the past. Seven demons have been cast out. Does there have anybody that would appreciate Jesus, so much? And so hugging somebody on a Sunday morning, putting your arm around them, touching a shoulder, that's a saint, is just an expression of, I love you. But if somebody's back from the dead, I can just imagine Jesus was nearly tackled. Okay? And if she lost him for 3 days, and now he's back, would you let him go? And so what I get is, in reading between the lines, is that Mary has just wrapped herself around him like an octopus. Okay. And so she's clinging to him. And he's it's not that he's uncomfortable like I might be. Rather, it is that he's saying, Mary, I've got work to do. I need for you to stop clinging to me. And so then the statement that you actually got to is, I have not yet ascended to the Father, but go to my brethren and say to them, I ascend to my Father and your Father and my God and your God. Now, that's kind of a mysterious statement the first time you hear it, and devoid of what will follow. But what follows is all those resurrection appearances, 40 years of hard work, 40 days, right? I'm sorry. 40 days of the hard work of convincing these people. And I think all it means is, I've got a lot to do. And so, between now and the ascension, there's a lot to take care of. And Mary, you need to let me go so I can go do it. And then we're going to read resurrection appearance after resurrection appearance, which is why it's so difficult to count. And you'll see one place where I'll confess that I think I got my numbering out of order, but I'm not sure what to do about it either. And so we're all just wrestling with a day that is filled with a joyful panic of reunion, and Jesus is on really a short timetable. So what he has things to do to prepare for that ascension. He has to get all this work done before he can leave. And I think she's at this moment just kind of an impediment. Appreciate your love, Mary, but I need to go. Okay, so that brings us then to number two. Now, the second occurrence, and already we start having problems, is you're reading through this. We have three women at the tomb, and they can't find the body, and then we have one woman that's at the tomb who's talking to two angels, but the other two women, are away from the tomb, and they're going to meet Jesus. But, it just says they left the tomb. Well, did the three leave together and then Mary Magdalene came back? Or did they leave the tomb just means that out of the three, two left? Right off the bat, we start having problems with all the chronology here. So, as I'm just outlining these, there's two women at least in the second appearance. They are Mary, the other Mary, who is the mother of James, and Salome, who was named a couple of pages back. And so those three women came to the tomb. Mary Magdalene apparently is the first, and alone to meet Jesus. The other two were part of her little entourage that had come to treat the body with spices. But in Matthew 28, in verses 9 and 10 now, as you see on page 255, bottom of the page, there it is. Verse 9, and behold, Jesus met them and greeted them. We have to back up two pages to pick up that thread in Matthew, and that's where it's a little bit confusing. I'm suggesting only two out of the three. But, sorry.
In verse 10, there's mention of Joanna, but you just mentioned that there's a Salome back in
the
what? Are they the same people? Or are they different people?
Well,
there's an extra woman.
I don't know. You lost me. I'm looking at 28:10. I don't see a Joanna.
1 says mentioned Salome, but then
okay, you have to give me a page reference.
2410, page 254.
Okay, Luke 24:10. That's the top of the left-hand column. Oh, I see. Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, and my mistake apparently, yes. Mary Magdalene and Joanna and Mary, the mother of James, also the other women with them, were telling these things to the apostles. So you're absolutely right, and I missed that, there's more than three, okay? And somehow Mary Magdalene gets separated, and you've caught me. I can't tell you right now if this is another name for Mary, Joanna. That's a great question. Or Salome, then. And I didn't research that, and I can't this week, and I can't remember anything either. So I'm not sure, you know, if there's a joint naming there or somebody else. But thank you for calling my attention to it. Verse 10, we're back at page 254, everybody, in Luke 24 and verse 10. And then it also adds at the end of that verse, also the other women with them. So it's an unspecified number. And I don't know who went where. And that's the problem. And so did they break up into only two groups? Did they break up into three groups or four groups? Let's just suppose that these five women right here come to the tomb and find it empty. Would you all stay together? Or would you have different people you'd want to talk to? Well, you don't know, do you? We can't answer the question, but we don't know. And so I can't tell you on the Joanna thing, and I don't know, different places. Ted?
Joanna's mentioned again with Mary Magdalene in Luke chapter 8, verse 3.
With Mary Magdalene?
Yeah. In verse 2 of Luke chapter 8, it says, also the woman who had been healed of evil spirits and sickness is Mary, who is called Magdalene, from whom seven demons have gone out, and Joanna, the wife of Chusa, Herod's steward, and Susanna, and many others.
Right, and yeah, and many others. Okay. You know, see, that's the thing I hate about these electronic concordances is now you guys can go find stuff faster than I can. Now I'm standing here. I don't remember. But, separate from Mary Magdalene, could be another name for Salome. My guess is that it's somebody entirely different. It was just one of these other women, and I don't know, you know, where it's going. Okay, so we're on page 255, and they refuse to believe Mary Magdalene. The second appearance is at verse 9 of Matthew 28, very bottom of that page. Behold, Jesus met them and greeted them. So there's our problem. How many? They came up and took hold of his feet. So what did they do? Same thing that Mary Magdalene did. How well can you walk with people who wrap their arms around your feet? You can't take a single step. So they're all doing the same thing. And they're worshiping him. The women get it a lot faster than the guys do. They also don't seem to have the same problem with sort of slipping back into doubt that it looks like some of the men will do later. I'm not going to get into a big psychological discussion of the distinctions between men and women, but we've all read a whole lot of articles in that regard. And as a matter of fact, guys typically are, I guess you'd say, more suspicious than women are, and they're harder to convince sometimes to their detriment, and Jesus will rebuke them for it. But these women now, Mary is the first, Mary Magdalene, to see Jesus, but all of these women now, one after the other, are seeing Jesus before any men do, before the apostles do. And so they're coming to this conclusion rather instantly and immediately. The guys are going to have a real harder time with it. So at verse 10, though, and this will help us, I think, with understanding Saber's question a few minutes ago and seeing the same thing going on in verse 9 with him clinging to his feet. In verse 10, Jesus said to them, do not be afraid. Go and take the word to my brethren to leave for Galilee, and there they shall see me. Now, with all the witnesses, hundreds of them, maybe thousands, Jesus goes to the cross and then to the tomb. Now, 3 days pass, it's first light of dawn. These three women come, and they're the only ones apparently at the tomb at that time of the day. They'll bear in mind, At that time of the day, Jerusalem is really quite busy. They're very much coming alive and getting into their day. And so they're not using their alarm clocks, and they're, you know, tied to light and dark a good deal more than we are. And the heat of the day, and in this year, at this time of year, getting very hot, likely that the city's pretty busy, but it appears to be at the tomb, only these that are named. But the business at hand is, I need everybody to go to Galilee. So Jesus is rising there. That's where the tomb was. It does not look like he's going to spend a whole lot of time in Jerusalem, though. We're going to get a whole lot of resurrection appearances in Jerusalem. So, for instance, if you now turn the page to 256 at the top, you'll see at section 250 and in bold it says, report of the soldiers to the Jewish authorities, and then with dashes and in italics, what do you have immediately below that? Jerusalem. Fabulous little tool that they've put into the harmony right here, that everywhere that you possibly can tell, they give you the location throughout every event that takes place in the Gospels. In section 251, where are we going to be? Road to Emmaus. Okay. Well, most of these are Jerusalem. Most of these resurrection appearances are taking place in Jerusalem. But it appears to me that particularly with what Jesus has said about twice, you know, it appears, I'll cling to me, is that what Jesus is doing is he's making his way for Galilee. He's just rising, and now he's not, you know, going to spend a whole lot of time in Jerusalem. That's not to say he won't be there overnight, but he's got a work to do, and ultimately needs to get these disciples to Galilee. So, in Matthew 28 and verses 11 and 12, while they were on their way, behold, some of the guard came into the city and reported to the chief priests all that had happened. When they assembled with the elders and counseled together, they gave a large sum of money to the soldiers and said, you are to say, his disciples came by night and stole him away while we were asleep. And if this should come to the governor's ears, we will win him over and keep you out of trouble. And they took the money and did as they had been instructed. And this story was widely spread among the Jews and is to this day, the day of the writing of Matthew's gospel as he comes to the very end of it. Now, in all those verses there, 11 through 15, there is one word that I think is really the operative word for this whole discussion right here. You will find that in verse 12. It's the word just before some. What's that word? Large. Okay. Because as you've all learned through the years, you know so well, if you have a Roman soldier's detail and you fail to perform your duty as that Roman soldier, then what? It is severe. It can be fatal. It can mean torture, cat of nine tails, the flogging. It can mean imprisonment. It can mean a bunch of stuff. And so, if you're going to get paid off for what appears to be a Roman soldier's failure of duty, what does it take? A lot of money. Okay? Now, these guys, though, are in trouble. So, are they going to go back and report what's happened? It's kind of fortunate for them, because they likely need a large sum of money, because maybe half of them have decided, I'm not telling anybody anyway, I'm just running. And so, it was fortunate that it worked out for them the way that it did. But as the next few days are going to develop, they don't have any way of telling what's going to happen. And so, the guard came into the city, and notice who they reported to first, though. This is a Roman detail. Who did they report to? Isn't that odd? Now, who was it that was driving this with the governor? Same guys, chief priest. So, they're, you know, they've been told by the governor to do what these guys say. So when they're in this trouble, first they go to the chief priests. And they're as much looking for help as anybody you've ever seen. And then fortunately they get it. As it turns out, to the detriment, of course, to the simple truth, these men are in a bind. The chief priests are in a bind.
the two decide to collude together. Probably some negotiating went on, large sums of money, and these guys decide they're going to run the risk. It'll be worth it if you pay me enough, and we're just not going to say anything and hope the governor never hears about it.
Could they have used the large sum to buy themselves out of the army, or part of that large sum, so that they wouldn't be under the
You know, that's a, that is a great question. What Carol is suggesting is that these soldiers might have been thinking in terms of using the money to pay off the remainder of their service so that they could become free from their Roman responsibility as soldiers. Now, I don't think the U.S. Army allows that, but I think the Roman Army did. And so, you say, could they? And the answer would be, well, yeah, I suppose they could. We don't have any information on it, but maybe that's what they had in mind as well. At any rate, they're in very deep trouble. These Pharisees or the chief priests are in deep trouble. So a lot of money changes hands. These priests, by the way, they've got access to so much money, brethren, it's mind-boggling. It's just truly mind-boggling. The Jews are bringing vast sums of money as offerings in the temple. In the court of the women, they have these trumpet-shaped devices that you would toss your money into so that it would funnel down into a box. And that being the case, it seems like they have four of them. And then the treasury is right there. Enormous sums of money are coming in. And the chief priests have control of all of it. So that leads us then to Luke 24 and our next resurrection appearance. Let's see if I can get these right now. So there's two. Pardon me, though. I'm thinking, brethren, and again, it's my own supposition, that the third resurrection appearance would be to Peter. Out of order in this book, I'm arguing with their chronology, and over on page 257, though, we just have this from 1 Corinthians 15. It's not even in the Gospels. He appeared to Cephas. Well, he appeared to Cephas. When did that take place? And I'm just suggesting that this is a likely possibility right here. And as you look at some of the other clues, as you go through subsequent verses, you know, perhaps this would be a good place to put that. It's a difficult one to tell anyway. So I'd suggest that. And then that brings us to number four with these two disciples on the road to Emmaus. We're on page then now, 256, right-hand column in the middle at Luke 24:13. Two of them were going that very day to a village named Emmaus, which was about 7 miles from Jerusalem, so not all that far. They were conversing with each other about all these things which had taken place. And it came about that while they were conversing and discussing, Jesus himself approached and began traveling with them. Now, in Mark's account, after that he appeared in a different form to two of them while they were walking along on their way to the country, and they went away and reported it to the others, but they did not believe them either. Okay, so just to catch up with Mark there, Jesus was concealed somehow. And in the end, the same disbelief results from their testimony. But Jesus will have to reveal himself. And so it is now when you come to Luke 24:16 on that page. Luke says their eyes were prevented. Mark said he was in a different form. So the way their eyes were prevented were because he had taken a different form. It wasn't that this difficulty they have recognizing him is so much in their own eyes as that their eyes apparently see perfectly, but Jesus is concealing himself with some different form. He said to them, "What are these words that you're exchanging with one another as you're walking?" And they stood still, looking sad, and one of them, named Cleopas, answered and said to him, "Are you the only one visiting Jerusalem and unaware of the things which have happened here in these days?" And he said to them, "What things?" They said to him, "The things about Jesus the Nazarene, who was a prophet, mighty indeed in word in the sight of God and all the people, and how the chief priests and our rulers delivered him up to the sentence of death and crucified him. But we were hoping that it was he who was going to redeem Israel. Indeed, besides all this, it's the third day since these things happened. But also some women among us amazed us when they were at the tomb early in the morning." So the day's progressing. It's not early in the morning now. "And did not find his body. They came saying that they'd also seen a vision of angels who said that he was alive. And some of those, top now, page 257, who were with us, went to the tomb, found it just exactly as the women also had said. But him they did not see. And he said to them, "Oh, foolish men and slow of heart to believe in all that the prophets have spoken. Was it not necessary for the Christ to suffer these things and to enter into his glory?" Beginning with Moses and with all the prophets, he explained to them the things concerning himself in all the scriptures. And they approached the village where they were going, and he acted as though he would go further. And they urged him, saying, "Stay with us, for it's getting toward evening, and the day is now nearly over." He went in to stay with them. It came about that when he had reclined at the table with them, he took the bread and blessed it, and breaking it, he began giving it to them. And their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he vanished from their sight. And they said to one another, "Were not our hearts burning within us while he was speaking to us on the road, while he was explaining the scriptures to us?" This is just such an interesting exchange. Look at what Jesus said in verse 25. First words out of his mouth, "Oh, foolish men." Now, these two guys are, from their standpoint, what are they looking at? A total stranger. Bumped into, "Are you the only guy in Israel? How can you, where are you from?" You know? And he says, "Oh, foolish men and slow of heart to believe all the prophets have spoken. Was it not necessary for the Christ to suffer these things and to enter his glory?" So, what is he saying to them? He's giving them a very pointed sermon, and he's rebuking them in the process, this total stranger. But, what are we told at the end? While they're listening to this, what's going on in their hearts? They're just burning, whatever that means. And then he was going to leave. Were they taking offense because he called them foolish? What did they do? Begged him to stay, come spend the night with us. And so now they go to the table, and apparently this conversation has been going on for some time. Now, by the way, brother, it would take, you know, it would take me about 2 hours to walk 7 miles. I could do that pretty easily in 7 miles, even in that hilly terrain probably. But, you know, they're also at the house. There's a lot of information right here. But they don't recognize him until the different form is apparently changed at the moment of this breaking of bread. And then at the end of verse 31, it's Jesus. And then what? He's just gone. Now what are you thinking? It's Jesus. We saw him. He convinced us in the sermon. Our hearts were burning. And then he just vaporized. Okay? What are you going to do? Well, there's two disciples looking at each other and they go, "We get it." Go what? Go tell somebody else. What does Mark report over on the preceding page? They went away, reported it to the others, but not a one believer. Okay, Brent, it's always going to be that way. This brings us then, of course, to number five. So, we get that report again in Luke, in verse 33 on page 257. They arose that very hour, returned to Jerusalem, found gathered together the 11 and those who were with them. The Lord has really risen and has appeared to Simon. This is why I put the Cephas, you see, next to that column before. And they began to relate their experiences on the road and how he was recognized by them in the breaking of the bread. So apparently Jesus had told them he'd appeared to Cephas. That's why I make that rearrangement. But they don't believe. So this will bring us now to John chapter 20, verses 19 and following. Very bottom right of 257. "When therefore it was evening on that day, the first day of the week," and this is our fifth appearance, "when the doors were shut where the disciples were," turning the page to John's column on 258, "for fear of the Jews, Jesus came and stood in their midst and said to them, 'Peace be with you.' Now in Luke's column, they're startled and frightened and thought they were seeing a ghost. He said to them, why are you troubled? Why do doubts arise in your hearts? We're in Luke's column now, 39. See my hands and my feet, that it is I myself. Touch me and see, for a spirit does not have flesh and bones as you see that I have. And when he had said this, he showed them his hands and his feet, and while they still could not believe it, but what? For joy, and were marveling, he said to them, have you anything here to eat? They gave him a piece of broiled fish. He took it and ate it before them. Now shifting over to John's column again. The disciples therefore rejoiced when they saw the Lord, and Jesus therefore said to them, peace be with you. As the Father has sent me, I also send you. And when he had said this, he breathed on them and said to them, receive the Holy Spirit. If you forgive the sins of any, their sins have been forgiven them. If you retain the sins of any, they have been retained. But Thomas, one of the 12 called Didymus, was not with them when Jesus came. The other disciples therefore were saying to him, we have seen the Lord. But he said to them, unless I shall see in his hands the imprint of the nails and put my finger into the place of the nails, put my hand into his side, I will not believe. Now, brethren, I've messed up a little bit here in my times also. I forgot to mention that on that page 258, the sixth occurrence is in verse 14. Afterward, he appeared to the 11 themselves as they were reclining at table, and he reproached them for their unbelief and hardness of heart because they had not believed those who had seen him after he had risen. So it appears to me that we have our fifth and our sixth occurrences like this, and we are getting different groups of apostles. There's 10 apostles in that number 5 because they haven't picked a new apostle yet, and who's not there? Thomas. Then in 11, number 6, we're going to get all of these 11. I can't say this all backwards. Number 6 is on the top left. You have all 11 apostles. So there's 10 back in John 20, 19 to 25. There's 11 right here, and then my time's up. Next week, we'll have 11 again, and Thomas, of course, is going to get his answer. All right. Sorry about that. I got kind of confused there at the end. Any comment or question? Over here.
On page 258, John 22, and when he breathed on them and said to them, receive the Holy Spirit, mm-hmm. How many people who think they've received the Holy Spirit have been breathed on by Jesus?
Not too many. That's going to be quite the study when we get to the book of Acts come the 1st of July. All right, any other comment or question? Thank you very much.